My name is Chris Strong. I am 40 years old. Today is December 28th, 2017. I'm speaking with Dori Hirsch, who is my grandmother. We're recording this interview in Chicago, Illinois. So, Grandma, can you tell me a little bit about your childhood?
Well, I had a most unusual childhood. I was born in 1933, just towards the end of the Depression, in Grand Mound, Iowa, a little bitty town somewhere north of Davenport, Iowa. And during the Depression, my dad hoed strawberries for $1 a day, anything to keep food on the table. I was the only child of Francis and Bill Baker. And as the Depression ended, my dad met an Indian fellow by the name of Don Napier and came home all excited to tell Mom that they had decided to start a medicine show. And my mom, who had been a school teacher, thought he had gone out of his mind, but nevertheless, they formed this medicine show. So that would have been about 1938, something in that area. And they formed a kind of a traveling caravan. They hired acrobats and blackface comedians and general entertainment. This was before we didn't have television. Radio was almost, it was the only way of any entertainment. And of course, in small towns, they decided that the best thing to do with this medicine show, which they named the Wakanza Medicine Show, and they started in Minnesota in the summer, and they went south to Texas in the winter and stayed along the banks of the Mississippi River. They would go into a town, and first Dad would find a farmer that was near to town and would rent a field from them. And that was where the show was set up. They had a stage that was broken down and collapsible, and it had a big banner across the front of it. And they would mark out the perimeter of the show field with big bare bulb light bulbs. They would make a square around this field. And then they would set up wooden benches. And the black folks sat on one side and the white folks sat on the other side. And then they would ballyhoo, which meant that they would get on the back of the pickup truck and with a big blowhorn and all the excitement they could make, they would run through town. The medicine show is coming. The medicine show is coming. And, you know, such and such a place. And that was how they advertised. And they would be a week, sometimes 2 weeks, if they were a big success. My dad was the pitchman, and they sold two products. They had a really, really wonderful salve, which was great for burns, and then a tonic that was great for everything else. But Dad was tall and handsome and had a kind of a magnetic personality, and he would pitch these products. And the way that he demonstrated the benefit of the salve still just blows my mind, because he had a blowtorch, and he had the blowtorch on the stage and would put the iron in the blowtorch until it got red hot. And then he would take the iron and rub it across the palm of his hand. And after which he applied the salve. And that was it. No blisters, no burning. So it was rather a dramatic presentation. He sold a lot of salve. And then we had the Indian, Don Napier, and he would come on stage in full feathered outfit, feathers from top to toe, and do some kind of a little dance or something or other. But just his appearance was very dramatic to these people in these little bitty small towns. And this was big time entertainment for them. And then they would have the acrobats and, of course, always a guitar player. And usually a blackface comedian. And from what I heard the folks talk about was that it seemed like the black folks laughed harder at the comedian than the blackface comedian than the white people did, because they just could tie into what those jokes were. My mom ran the popcorn machine, and she would position the popcorn machine so that the smell of fresh popcorn wafted over the audience. And they had a most favorite girl contest. And that was judged strictly by the amount of popcorn box tops you turned in at the end of the show run. And whatever family had bought the most popcorn and turned it in, why, she was the star of the show. And I was probably 3 or 4, and Mom said I would take my teddy bear and walk out in the audience and see a couple that looked like grandma and grandpa kind of people, and I would sit down with them during the show. And I never was afraid of anything or anybody. And so then I got turned 6, and it's time to start school. So with us traveling a week or two in every town, I think the first year that I was in school, we were in 7 states and 13 schools. And I would just bring home the books from wherever school I was at and would read through to where the kids were. And of course, with Mom being a teacher, she could help. And it never occurred to me that that wasn't a normal way of life. Mom tells a story that one day they had been a particular success, and they were held over for 3 weeks. So I came to her and I said, "Mom, when are we going to move? I'm getting tired of looking these same old kids and the same old teacher." So things have changed so much. You can imagine what you would try to do registering your kids in all of those schools. The paperwork would just be monumental. But then it was apparently accepted. And so then they were really quite successful. When they went into Texas is where we ran into a lot of real prejudice. And there was no use for black folks in Texas except slaves or menial jobs, and they had to be somewhat careful as to what went on with the blackface comedian, etc. And that was the only place where they had any difficulties at all. But then a big stumbling block occurred because the war began, December 7th, 1941.
And you were how old then?
I was born in 33, 12. So I must 11. Have been 8 years old, 7 years old. Yeah. Anyhow, within a year, even less than that, every available man had quit the show, joined the army, or whatever, the service, and everything became rationed. Gas was unrationed. rubber tires were not available for the cars and the trucks, and no manpower. So the show closed down, and by 1942, I think that was the end of the show.
What was your happiest day in the medicine show?
I have no idea. I have a book of old pictures that Mom collected from the show, and it's fun looking through them and seeing me in different spots. I always had a doggie and usually a cat also. And they were kind of like my brothers and sisters because I didn't have any other kids around. I never had a long-term friend, you know, a lifelong friend or anything. So it was, and I would put the, I had this cat that was a most unusual kitty. And this was after we had closed the show and had moved into a rather stable type situation. The folks kept trying all kinds of businesses, and one of them was running a motel and a restaurant combined. And so I remember I had this big kitty cat who loved to sleep in my doll buggy. And when I would come home from school, I would put my big baby doll's dress on this big tomcat and put a bonnet on his head, covering the ears, fill the little baby milk bottle with milk. It had a rubber nipple. And he and I would go walking around the neighborhood, him in the baby carriage, me pushing him. He's sucking the milk out of the bottle and never bit the nipple and never tried to jump out of the baby carriage. He was a most unusual kitty cat. But we always had, as I say, dogs, cats, and met a whole lot of people in my lifetime, most of which I cannot remember having met, but it was quite a different educational growing up.
What was the most difficult part about growing up in a medicine show?
I just accepted that it was a way of life. Probably the primitive trailers that we lived in. And
what were those like?
Pardon me?
What was your bedroom like when you were...
Oh, well, my bedroom was the dining room table during the daytime, and then it would fold down and they put a mattress on it, and that was where I slept. And of course there was no running water, and you went outside to get your water and to go to the John, and it was primitive living, to say the least. But in 1941, that was, everybody had difficulties. You know, we didn't have all of the luxuries and conveniences that we have now.
What two people were the biggest influences on you as a child?
On my childhood?
Yeah.
Well, probably my mother.
Grandma Baker?
Mm-hmm. Grandma Baker, Frances Baker. And Mom was very wise. She was, she was patient. She was willing to go along with my dad and all of these wild ideas. But, you know, they made a living and they worked together on the projects. And she certainly was my idol and my person I tried to pattern my life after.
So in 1941, the war started and you were 8 or 9?
8.
What happened? Where did you spend your teenage years?
in Sioux Falls. Mm. We finally, after several businesses that were not very successful, why we settled in Sioux Falls, South Dakota, and that's where Grandma Murphy had moved after she closed down the farm and moved in to Sioux Falls. Grandma Murphy had homesteaded in the middle of South Dakota.
What's homesteading?
Homesteading is when you go out and claim your plot of ground, build a mud hut, and live there, and these 2 acres became your property. The government gave it to you for settling it. This was in Geddes, South Dakota. And she homesteaded herself near Presho, and then she got married to George Murphy. And this was in 1907. And they moved. They farmed near Murdo and Presho until his death. And after Grandpa died, that was the second time the barn had burned down, and it took all the killed all the livestock. So Grandma Murphy moved to Sioux Falls and brought with her a big white goose. That was the only thing from the farm that she brought with her, was this goose that was in her backyard. And so she started a rooming house just for men. And I don't know, it was a big house. She bought a big 2-story house. And I think it maybe had 6 different rooms in it that she let out. She didn't do any cooking for them. That was just a place for them to sleep and to keep their possessions and stuff. And then she got this big dog, Pal, who was a cross between a German Shepherd and some other very daunting dog. So she kept Pal chained to the door into her private rooms. And so nobody ever bothered Grandma at all. She had no trouble at all. And so anyhow, Grandma was there, so, and a couple of, after the war, the brothers came back too. Mother had 3 brothers and a sister, and Mom was firstborn. And so during the war, one brother was in the Marines, one was in the Army, and one was in the Navy. And I can remember the flags hanging on Grandma's window with the stars for each of her boys that were in the service. They all came back okay, except one was seriously damaged. But they settled in Sioux Falls, and then we settled in Sioux Falls. So I went 4 years to Washington High School, and it was a good school. I loved it. I was a very good student. And at the same time, I joined the Methodist Church that was a few blocks from our house. And so I spent a lot of my time either at school or at the church with different activities and things, and made some really good friends there. And that was 4 years in one school.
Which probably felt strange.
That was monumental. Yeah.
How did they decide on Sioux Falls?
Because Grandma lived there, and you know, it was just where the family was gathering. Her sister lived there, and so it was just, and Sioux Falls was a big city then. It was the biggest town in Iowa and South Dakota and maybe even Minnesota. It was, Sioux Falls was in the corner of South Dakota, the southeast corner. So it was a good location. Good roads, good track. Anyhow, that's...
I've heard a story about grandma having to hide under the kitchen kettle when the Indians would come or something?
Yeah. When mom was maybe 2 years old or whatever, the grandma and grandpa were still living out in probably the Myrtle area of South Dakota. They frequently had visits with Indians. Now, before they learned to work together, which they eventually did, they were terrified. Oh, the Indians are coming, the Indians are coming. And so they, you know, hide anything that's valuable. And so the Indians came and they knocked on the door and they said, I think it was, I want Lila. And Grandma said, no, you can't have Lila. Well, the whatever word it was they were asking for, they wanted water. But Grandma thought they wanted her youngest child. So quick, put her under the big kettle that they cooked in over the fireplace, hide her, because you know you can't have Lila. But then they understood water, okay, here you go. And leading into that is another story that I just find fascinating and awful. The Indians and the settlers learned to work together. They decided they really did better when they helped each other than if they fought each other. So every harvest time, they would harvest one field, and whatever place they were harvesting, why, it was up to the housewives to cook the big meal in the middle of the day, because these men were working hard and they were starved. And so this time it was time to harvest the Indian chief's farm. And before they went out to the fields, why, Grandpa Murphy was playing with a whole bunch of puppies, and he thought they were just so cute. So then they went out and they harvested, and they came in for lunch, and everybody was eating and the food was delicious. And Grandpa said, I've never seen so many legs. What kind of food did we have that had all of these legs? And when she told him it was those puppies he had been playing with, he was so sick he couldn't work the rest of the day.
Well, you guys ate puppies back then?
The Indians did.
Oh, jeez.
I can remember then, I even later on, we had a little dog, a fox terrier, and she disappeared one night, and we were terrified that she would be Indian food. So, yeah.
I didn't know about that one.
It's bad, but it was a true story.
Yeah. Meat's meat, I guess. So what advice would you give your teenage self at this point?
Oh, it was just, I worked hard and I had a lot of fun. I learned how to square dance. And I, in fact, even led some square dance classes and stuff. And we always had two or three formal dances at the Arcota Ballroom, which was the main big dance hall in Sioux Falls. And several times a year, the school would have a big formal dance. And oh, I love getting all dressed up in the formal and having a date and going to the dances. And they'd always would bring a corsage. And it was a whole different kind of a lifestyle than what the kids have now. My advice is, you know, wherever you are, you do the best you can, and you study hard, and you just try to contribute to make other people's lives better.
Do you remember where you were when you found out that the war was over?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. We were in Sioux Falls. There was a big air base in Sioux Falls. And the town went, it was August the 11th of, what was it? 1946 or 47. In 47, because I turned 12 a week later. The town went absolutely wild. All of the guys on the base came into town, and they conscripted the fire engines, and they built teepees in the middle of town, and they set fires, and they turned the fire hoses on people and crowds and grabbed every woman they could for kissing them. And it was just a wild, insane scene. It was just like the whole town went crazy.
How long did it take to settle down? Was that a week-long event, or?
No. I just remember it being that one day when it was just wild, crazy, insane. People were so happy that the war was over. And it was a different time then, because everybody was participating in the war in some way. You were either, the guys were in the service, or the women were working. Yeah, that's when women went to work in factories, because they needed help to build all the supplies for war. You couldn't buy a car from the time the war began until after the war ended. And everything was rationed. We used to save tinfoil from your gum wrappers, and grease, bacon grease, hamburger, and you would pour that because that could be used to make soap or bombs or something or other. And you had a ration book, and you were only limited as to how much sugar or butter. That's when oleomargarine became a factor, was during World War II. Because you couldn't get butter, or butter was rationed, so they manufactured margarine.
So, but everybody knew that the U.S. wasn't going to lose the war the last year or so, right?
Not necessarily. Japan was a real strong factor. Mm. Japan was, we'd beaten Germany. That was a given, but Japan had entered into this mess. I mean, they're the one that started it with the bombing of Pearl Harbor. And they still were. That's why Truman had to make the decision to end it, because, it could have gone on and on. And the longer it was going, the more men we were losing. And so the horrible atomic bomb ended the war.
Mm-hmm.
That was that.
Can you tell me about two people that you remember who were particularly kind to you in your lifetime? That are not your mother or your father?
Oh, yeah. I had an interesting friendship with a woman in a very small town in Benson, Arizona, where I lived for a year or so after I was married. And this lady was a lady minister, and she was in a wheelchair. I'm not sure what the problem was, but she couldn't get out of her wheelchair. And she and I started a Girl Scout and Brownie troop. And
how old were you at this point?
Oh, probably 20, 21, something like that. Your dad was a baby.
Uh-huh.
And so we would go for walks with the girls and take them on all kinds of scout activities. And Alan would be, baby Alan would be in his stroller, and this wonderful woman who was, she was just very sweet and kind, and she was my about only friend in that area, and she was a dear.
Yeah, Dad never told me he was a Girl Scout. Hmm? Dad never told me he was a Girl Scout at one point.
He went through quite a few walks through the desert in his stroller, and the girls loved to push him. And I don't know, I've met many, many wonderful people in my lifetime. I can't think of any particular one that
Well, so that gets us to where, Arizona?
I really don't want to talk about Arizona. I just, that put us in Arizona briefly.
Why don't you tell me one of your happiest memories?
I suppose it would be the birth of two healthy children when I had first Alan and then 3.5 years later, Kim. Kim almost didn't make it here, so it was very special to have.
What do you mean she didn't almost make it here?
Well, I had a lot of trouble carrying her. It was just
yeah.
Not easy. Anyhow, her birth, and I don't know, I have, right now I am leading one of the happiest lives because I live in a nice home, I'm in a nice community, I have a wonderful church friends, I have all this healthy family, as I look back, it just amazes me that I'm an only child. I had two kids. The two kids had four kids. No, the two kids had six kids, four of which are married. And out of that, we now have eight great-grandchildren. And they're all but one are very healthy and just tremendously fun to be around.
Well, you have about 10 more minutes. Is there any stories that I missed or anything?
Well, let's see what we've got here. If you want to... Well, this is Mom's obituary. And the Argus leader thought it was so important that we told this story about the medicine show, that they gave her this big featured thing. Mrs. Baker traveled with her husband along the Mississippi River for 5 years, setting up the Waukonsa Medicine Show in towns from Minnesota to Texas. The couple employed a country western guitar player, acrobats, we always had an accordion player too, and various other acts to entertain the public while they sold their products. And about Mom running the machine. And I still have a tin of that salve, you know.
You? Really?
I do. It's really hard to get open, but I do have a tin of that salve. One of the things about that salve that was very interesting is we were in this town and a little girl got scalded with hot water. And instead of calling a doctor, doctors cost money, they called Dad. And he came and, I guess, greased this kid up with this black, smelly, staining salve. within 2 hours, all of the burning was stopped, and she healed up with not even a scar.
Do you know what was in the salve? I mean, it must be...
Well, it's a tar product. I don't know what else is in it, but you can come and look at it someday.
Where'd they get it from? Did they make it themselves?
Well, it was, yeah. It was made by Don Napier, the Indian guy. He made the salve, or had the company that made the salve.
Huh. Weird. Yeah, I'd like to see the salve someday.
Remind me when you're over at the house. That's quite a testament to the fact that it was really, really good product.
So where are Grandma Baker's parents from? Where do we all come from?
From Tilly Murphy.
Where were her parents from?
I'm not sure, but the name was Humphrey. So I think probably English.
Yeah.
And Dad's family, that was Baker. And they were from Alton, Illinois, near north of St. Louis. Mm-hmm. And I never knew much of Dad's family. His mother had a stroke when she was in her middle 40s as she was going down the stairs and pregnant with her last child, with Aunt Elma. And it took out her whole left side. Her arm was all crippled up like that. Of course, in those days, they didn't know about physical therapy. And so she had the baby, but somebody else raised Aunt Elma. And she was lived over in Rock Island. And Grandma Baker spent at least 20 years in a nursing home. Mm. And, you know, with each year getting worse, going downhill. So I did not know. Dad had a brother, Uncle Wes. And the two brothers both married Franceses. Aunt Frances, and my mother's name was Frances. And Dad loved to go pheasant hunting, this life in South Dakota. Fishing and hunting, but only for pheasants. He never shot deer or animals. And Uncle Wes would come up to join. The first day of pheasant season, which was the middle of October, was always just a big, big day. And I liked to walk the fields. I never hunted, but I loved to walk through the cornfields and scare the birds up.
Oh,
you walk down the corn rows, and then they fly.
Did you have to duck when they started shooting?
No, they shoot over you. There's some blessings to being short. Yeah. But anyhow, this had been a day when we had not flushed very many birds at all, and we had Uncle Wes posted at the end of the field. And so we hear bluey, bluey, and Dad says, oh, good. Two birds had flown up, and Dad says, well, Wes has got him. So we get to the end, and Dad says, did you get him? And Wes says, did I get what? He said, I saw a couple rabbits, and I shot them. So his back was turned when the birds flew over his head. That was a major brother dispute right there.
That's funny. Well, we have 5 minutes left. I have one last question. Thinking about your family many generations from now and knowing that they may hear this recording, is there anything you want to say to them? Any wisdom or advice you would like to share?
Well, I would like them to know that I've led a good life. It was a life with certainly a lot of heartache in it, losing two husbands, widowed twice. But on the other hand, It's been a very good life. It's been a full life. It's been a very interesting life. I'm happy to be 84 and still quite mobile and able to have fun with my great-grandchildren, which not too many people have. And, you know, you have to look at life as what you make of it. If you want to wake up and say, I'm going to be happy today, you will be happy. And that's important.
All right. Thanks, Grandma. That's it.
Okay. So we've used up 45 minutes.